Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hello and welcome to Is It Normal? The Pregnancy Podcast with me, Jessie Ware. We have had so many messages asking to do an episode on this particular symptom that has affected so many of you. So this is a special episode all about pregnancy sickness, extreme pregnancy sickness. You may have heard that Kate Middleton had it throughout her pregnancy, and I know so many of you have. And so there's a big discussion that needs to be had about it. We are joined by Dr. Caitlin Dean, who is the chair of the charity Pregnancy Sickness Support and a specialist in hyperemesis gravidarum, which is the term, the official term for extreme pregnancy sickness. Thank you so much for joining us on Is It Normal, Caitlin?
Hi, thanks for having me.
So can you explain, for people that may not know they're suffering with this, they may think it's what we say in inverted commas, morning sickness. What is hyperemesis gravidarum?
Yeah, so pregnancy sickness, and as it's kind of commonly but inaccurately called morning sickness, because it's rarely limited to the morning, it is a normal part of pregnancy. Most women will experience some degree of nausea and or vomiting during early pregnancy. We all expect it. Often, if it's a wanted pregnancy, it's kind of wanted because it's
reassuring.
It's reassuring, and it's a bit of a rite of passage. It's part of the whole pregnancy experience that you know, if we're trying to get pregnant, we want and we anticipate. But it is on a spectrum, and for around 30 to 35% of people, it will be bad enough to start interfering with their day-to-day lives, making it difficult to eat and drink, difficult to go to work, and really start getting you down. And for around 1% of pregnant women, it will be so severe that it ends up where you need to take medication, you need to go to hospital, you can't keep yourself hydrated by drinking enough fluids, you can't eat normally, you start losing a lot of weight. And in extreme cases, it can be life-threatening. Prior to modern medicine, it was the leading cause of death in early pregnancy. In those days, women died quite a lot in pregnancy-related things, but certainly in early pregnancy, extreme sickness could kill them.
So lots of people may be throwing up and getting what, you know, people may refer to as morning sickness, but throughout the day. But when would that and pregnancy sickness, morning sickness usually finish? And then when would you know that basically you've got the extreme version of this?
Yeah. So it's quite interesting. We often find on our helpline that people put up with really quite extreme symptoms before they think, hang on a minute, surely this isn't normal. Right. And I therefore would generally suggest to people, because like I say, you do anticipate it and you do expect it. And we are all sort of programmed to be willing to put up with an awful lot of discomfort and unpleasantness in order to produce our children. I mean, if we weren't, you know, the human race wouldn't have survived. Mm. So generally I say, if it's worse than what you're expecting, then it probably isn't normal, because we expect normal. So if it's starting to interfere with your ability to eat and drink, if it's starting to really get you down, it's making it very difficult to go to work or to look after yourself, if you're losing much weight and things like that, then, you know, that's not normal. That's not what the vast majority of women experience in early pregnancy. The vast majority experience waves, occasional waves of nausea, yeah. not necessarily in the morning, sometimes throughout the day, but they it comes in waves. And when it's not there, it's not there. Whereas with hyperemesis and the more extreme end, the nausea is constant. And vomiting, you know, shouldn't be sort of multiple times every day for days on end. The more severe it is, the longer it tends to go on. So if you're sort of one of the lucky ones that has sort of regular symptoms, then you can expect them to start between maybe 4 and 6 weeks, maybe up to 8 weeks. It would, like I say, come in waves through the day. You should be able to eat and drink in between waves of nausea. And it should generally resolve around 12 to 14 weeks. But if you're having symptoms that are much worse than that, then it may go on longer, more to 16, 20, 24 weeks. And with very extreme hyperemesis, it can go on throughout the entire pregnancy.
Oh my God. I can't even imagine. I mean, those first 12 weeks were hard enough. And that was with me. I think I threw up once. Okay. Yeah. And that's me, you know, feeling all the hormones kicking in and feeling really off. The idea of vomiting repeatedly throughout the day for 9 months is terrifying. I think it's terrifying yeah. for pregnant people that this goes on. Is there any reason that there's a cause for it in some people and others not?
Yeah, so there's some quite interesting new research. Dr. Marlena Faso has really pioneered the genetic research in the USA. And she's identified a sort of, it's quite complicated explaining genetic research. And if I'm completely honest, it's really not my field. But basically, she's identified a sort of faulty gene called GDF15 that occurs in women who get hyperemesis. And not in those who get sort of more regular pregnancy sickness. We don't entirely know why sickness and nausea is a normal part of pregnancy. It may be an evolutionary thing. It may be because it comes along with things like a heightened sense of smell. So it may be to do with putting us off foods that may be dangerous from days gone by. But certainly women who get the abnormal condition, it's a genetic problem basically, and therefore you're likely to get it again, and you can potentially pass it on to your children. The reason that her research is so particularly exciting is because this particular gene and the protein that causes it, that's created at the placenta, released by the placenta into the mother's bloodstream, it's only received in the sort of vomiting center of our brains. And although we couldn't turn off the production of it without obviously interrupting the pregnancy, what we can potentially do in the future is turn off the receptors to it in the brain, which would equal a sort of cure effectively for the treatment. And the reason that there's research happening around that is because it's the same thing that causes a condition related to cancer called cancer cachexia, which is like an anorexia of cancer. So around 20% of people with cancer will die not from the cancer itself, but from the sort of anorexia associated with it, where they get nausea, vomiting, muscle wastage. And it's the same cause as this. So this is almost like a cachexia, but of pregnancy. Wow. And because it's linked with this cancer condition, there's really quite a lot of money going into trying to fix that. Whereas for the pregnancy condition, there's no money going into trying to fix it. So potentially the cure for the cancer thing could in time be used in pregnancy to cure this condition. Because at the moment, all we have is medications that sort of mask the symptoms and help to manage the condition, but don't actually cure it.
Because not only is it going to be incredibly difficult for that pregnant person during their pregnancy, it's going to potentially put them off wanting to have another child after, because of the experience of having such a shocking pregnancy with this sickness.
Yes, you're right. It does affect people's ability to go on and have other children. And it can really ravage people's mental health as a result. I mean, you know, if you always imagined that you'd have a family of 2, 3, 4 children, and after one, or potentially after none, you realize that you can't go through that again and you can't have another pregnancy. That grief and loss, it's very similar to, you know, experiencing infertility. Mm-hmm. And yet there's very little empathy around that. So, you know, with infertility, there's a lot more, I think, understanding, and people can imagine how devastating that would be. But when you are limiting your family because of hypermesis, there's much less understanding about that. There's this kind of, oh, but, you know, you could get pregnant and you know, it's all right afterwards. You know, it's only 9 months and then the and then you're fine. But it isn't only just 9 months. And actually, it can cause damage to the mother's body and so on that can have lifelong consequences. And it can be really, I mean, it's like choosing to have a very, very severe life-threatening illness for 9 months. And when you already have a baby to look after, that's a very difficult decision to make.
Can I ask how, you know, we've talked about how it affects the mother, and it sounds horrendous. How can it affect the baby and the progress and growth of the baby? Because, of course, you're maybe not being able to stomach that many nutrients. If you're vomiting every time, you can't keep down water potentially. How is that going to affect the progress of the baby's development?
Yeah, so I don't want to sort of scare people, but in society at the moment, there's this kind of idea that we shouldn't take medication, and you know, our pregnancies should be all sort of natural and lovely and all this kind of thing. But the reality with this medical condition, this complication of pregnancy, is that it can have an effect on the developing fetus. And malnutrition in the first trimester, losing a lot of weight, not being able to eat and drink, does have consequences for the baby. And actually, malnutrition in early pregnancy in developing nations is really appreciated as a significant public health problem, because of the consequences to the baby. So you could, you sort of fundamentally altering the baby's genes by starving in the first trimester. It sort of develops believing it's going to be born into famine, and therefore it's at greater risk of cardiometabolic disorders later in life, such as diabetes and heart disease, when it reaches sort of adulthood. But even more short term than that, it does increase the risk of autistic spectrum disorders and neurodevelopment of the baby. And the reason I point that out is not to try and scare women, but it's to highlight that on balance, the medications that we have to try and control it so that you can eat and drink and not be starving and get nutrients into your body, the benefits of them massively outweigh the risks. Because the medications we use are, from masses and masses of studies, are not found to cause problems for the baby. But when you're told by a doctor, oh, but it's fine to be starving, the baby gets what it needs from your reserves, that's not true. So when you look at the risks of being starving versus the sort of hypothetical but not found in medical research risks of medication, women should be very reassured that the best thing they could do for their baby is to take the medication.
So what does the medication look like? What does it involve? How many pills are we talking about?
It really varies person to person. So some people are going to be able to, there's sort of the 30 to 35% I mentioned that have like clinically significant symptoms, might need time off work, for example. It's reasonable for them to need to take some medication to manage symptoms. There's actually a licensed medication in this country, although it's very difficult to get from your GP because a lot of areas don't have it that available. It's called Zomvia. It's been used in other countries for decades, but it's quite recent to the UK. But there's sort of first line antihistamine tablets that are anti-sickness. They're used commonly for things like travel sickness and so on, cyclozine and avamine and things like that. And then for people that doesn't help, they might need to move on to a higher level of sort of medication like ondansetron or metoclopramide, which are a bit more effective, but they can have slightly more unpleasant side effects. So ondansetron, for example, can cause really unpleasant constipation and headaches, which is why we wouldn't give it first, kind of thing. And then ultimately, you might be on a combination of medications and end up needing steroids to control the symptoms. In very rare cases, a termination will be needed to save the mother's life, but that's very rare. But sadly, a lot of women do end up terminating their wanted babies because access to treatment and proper treatment is not always very forthcoming, unfortunately.
But for people that are listening to this and who think they've got HG, there are medications they can use.
Absolutely.
And it seems like it's becoming a bigger conversation that people are starting to take more seriously than just, you know, morning sickness. So can I just ask, you know, so if people are really struggling with what they can eat, you know, maybe they can only stomach white toast and that's it. Regarding the nutrition for the baby, you know, how much do you need to get in to your system to feed a baby? Is it less than we actually think? That, you know, when we're like, feed the baby, you're eating for two, you know, if you are in this situation where you have HG, you know, how much can you survive on if your kind of palate and your food is limited?
Do you know what? It's really depressing, but we actually don't know. There is not that, no one has ever done that medical research.
Oh, really?
And actually, we in the last couple of years, the research community for hyperemesis did a project where we set like the priority questions that need to be answered by medical research. And that's one of the top priority questions, is how much is enough, and how do we get those nutrients into someone who has a vomiting condition? Because, you know, sometimes they try things like a tube that goes up your nose and into your stomach. But obviously, women, it's not very well tolerated because they throw the tube up. So, you know, it's really difficult. And one thing I would say to women is, as guilty as we feel, if all we're surviving on is, like you say, white bread and ready salted crisps and McDonald's fries, those kind of bland carbohydrates that are a bit salty, a calorie, when it's broken down by the body, a calorie is a calorie. And it doesn't actually matter where you fundamentally get it from. You also obviously need vitamins and minerals, which are not necessarily in those things. But if you are able to, you know, if nibbling on a bit of white bread or toast over half an hour quells the nausea enough so that you can swallow your multivitamin, then that's probably better than trying to manage fruit and vegetables and throwing it back up. Yeah. So ultimately, a calorie is a calorie. And so, and you can sort of add calories to food. So for example, if you are managing to eat jelly, for example, you can make it with milk and you can add extra milk powder, or you can get your husband or partner or whoever to add extra milk powder to it, and you're actually adding calories to it. You know, use more butter on your toast than you perhaps would, because it's all calories at the end of the day. And then if you're able to take vitamin tablets, then great. But if you're at that point, really, you know, it's reasonable to ask for medication that helps you to be able to eat more normally than that.
We've been talking about some really serious, quite frightening stuff here. We are going to speak to my friend after this, who's had two pregnancies, I think, with HG. Both babies are totally fine.
Yes, absolutely.
She's like, you know, and like, so I think that like it's really important to get this information, but equally, you know, it's, I'm sure you can, you must deal with pregnant people calling your helpline every day and you having to reassure them a lot of the time, right? That it's going to be okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had hyperemesis myself three times and my babies are all absolutely fine.
So is this, I wanted to ask you, I was presuming you are the chair of the pregnancy sickness support. So, you know, what was some of the stuff that you could stomach?
Yeah. Things like ready salted crisps, a toast with a bit of ham on. If you can add a bit of protein, that can be useful, cheese or ham or whatever. But yeah, it's literally whatever you can. But I mean, in hindsight, I was eating almost nothing. I mean, my middle child, I went nearly 3 months with barely a morsel of food passing my lips. And, you know, he is fine. He has had issues with his teeth because it's possible that the enamel wasn't laid down properly when he was but I mean, you know, in the scheme of things, it really doesn't matter. He's a bright young thing.
And hold on, you've had three children.
I have had three children. I did have a lot of support, and I think it's very important to point out that, you know, cases like the Duchess of Cambridge and admittedly my own is not representative of the average woman in Britain who doesn't have childcare on tap, whose job is at risk if they don't turn up. Although pregnancy is a protected thing and you shouldn't lose your job from pregnancy sickness, but in reality it happens all the time. And you know, most women, actually it's a real struggle, so asking for help from family and friends is really important. I was at, you know, my husband was able to be really flexible with work. We had childcare for my third pregnancy. We had a nanny, for goodness sake. I mean, most women don't have that. So, you know, planning it if you want another pregnancy is quite a good strategy. But yeah, I do want to reassure, like, most of the babies born are absolutely fine. It's just that it's important not to just sort of dismiss it as a sort of fluffy thing, because it is bad.
We haven't really touched on work, but you know, that's been a lot, from what I gather, has been a discussion about, yeah, work support at work if you are suffering from HG. Is there any key points that you can tell our listeners of how they should approach their workplace with how they can ask for support, what they are entitled to?
Yeah. So like I say, pregnancy is a protected sort of characteristic, and therefore if you are needing time off for a pregnancy related condition, which this is, then that has to be documented separately to general sickness, and you can't be punished or penalised. That said, there are big problems with the process for pursuing that, because your window of opportunity to go after an employer who has wrongly sacked you for a pregnancy-related condition is with high premises when you're ill, and then you have a newborn baby, and then after that you've lost your chance. So Pregnancy Sickness Support Helpline does have information about how to approach your boss. It's got information for employers and so on. But also there's another charity, Maternity Action, which offers very specific employment help and support if you feel like you're being discriminated against. And it is completely reasonable to need to take time off work. You know, if resting on the sofa means that you're able to eat and drink, that's more important than dragging yourself into work and being very, very ill as a result.
But I also think, you know, things have changed since COVID has occurred. People are working at home more, and people are seeing that it's still productive. And so therefore, hopefully.
So it would be reasonable to ask for flexible time and to have days at home and so on like that. That's completely reasonable and should be done.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, how can HG affect someone's mental health?
From what we've described of this kind of all day nausea and repeated vomiting, and for a lot of women, it's the nausea that is more torturous than the actual vomiting. I think, you know, most of us have been ill for a day or so. And when you're in that, imagine that for weeks and weeks and potentially months and months. And at the same time, you're being told that you should be grateful that you can get pregnant, that it's for a good reason, that you should just think positively, just don't think about being sick and you won't be sick, all this kind of complete nonsense, try ginger, all this stuff. So not only are you extremely ill at a time of your life where you are expecting to be happy, healthy, doing pregnancy yoga, eating organic, all this kind of stuff, shopping for the baby, and actually you find yourself bedbound with horrific symptoms, not just the nausea and vomiting, the heightened warped sense of smell. It's like the opposite of the loss of smell for COVID. Excessive salivation. By the second trimester, you might find that you wet yourself when you throw up because of the relaxin. You know, all these horrible symptoms. And so you find yourself housebound and isolated. And none of your family and friends really understand it. And when you go to your doctor and ask for help, you're told, oh, well, you know, it's just morning sickness. You just need to get on with it. It's normal. And that can have such a devastating impact on your mental health. It can be completely devastating. So it's reasonable to become depressed while suffering with high premises.
Are there ways you can access support? So is it through your charity, perhaps, are you able to find counsellors for people or therapists? Is that something that is allowed on the, or is encouraged by the NHS?
Not particularly on the NHS. So we are currently, we've recently been fundraising in order to set up an in-house counselling service at Pregnancy Sickness Support. At the moment, we have a peer support network. So we've got over 550 volunteers up and down the UK who have all been through the condition themselves. And they can offer a one-to-one peer support friendship to people who are suffering, which really helps to reduce the isolation and that sort of mental burden. And they can offer sort of self-help techniques and information about what medications are available, what services are in your area, and so on. it's not, you know, it doesn't replace actual talking therapies, but it certainly has a big improvement on reducing that sort of isolation and misery. But then, yeah, we're hoping to set up it within the next few months an actual counselling service that we can refer women to. Particularly, a lot of women find they need counselling afterwards to recover. They may have symptoms of PTSD from the experience. And after the pregnancy, they then try and make sense of what they've been through. And they may not feel like they fit in with mother and baby groups and that kind of thing, because their experience was so different to other women's. And so we're hoping to be able to offer that, but it's a case of fundraising. We seem like a big charity, but we're really very, very small.
Well, everyone can go and donate something, maybe. We'll put your links in the show notes.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I wanted to know, on a personal level, you've had three pregnancies, all with HG?
I did have HG in all of them, yeah.
Did it differ on different pregnancies, the level of HG, or were they all quite similar?
Yeah, so my second one was the worst. The first two were the worst. I was sick between then probably over 2,000 times. My second one was the worst. In my first, I didn't get given that many medications. I had some, but I didn't know that much about them. And then before my next one, I did lots of reading up and I thought, okay, I'm going to try this drug on Danzatron and then I'll have a normal pregnancy. And actually, it really barely touched the sides for me. Absolutely. And that sort of renewed sense of loss, I kidded myself that it was going to be different. And that was by far my worst pregnancy. I lost a lot of weight. By the time I gave birth, I was lighter than I had been at the start of the pregnancy. And then with my third, we literally planned it like a military operation. And like I say, I had a full-time nanny and I wasn't working at the time. Before that, I'd been a practice nurse. And it was a lot better. I did have a better care plan with a new GP who I think treated me better, and we kind of used the medications to sort of manage it better. She was a little girl, whereas my first two were boys. Potentially there is sort of connections with that. It's more common in female pregnancies, but I mean, you know, you don't have any control over that, so it's sort of neither here nor there. But hers was better. I was still ill all the way through, but like I made it downstairs every single day. I didn't lose as much weight. I managed to eat something every day. And I probably throughout the whole pregnancy, although I had nausea the whole way through, I was probably only sick maybe 50 times through the whole pregnancy. So it was a lot more manageable. And I think that was to do with kind of planning and support and things like that. And by then I'd set up through the charity, the support network. So I was in contact with other women who knew what I was going through, and that helped massively. Whereas my first one, I mean, in those days, Facebook was only just starting and I didn't even have a smartphone. So it was very isolating.
So, yeah, how long ago was your first pregnancy?
Oh, my eldest was 14 last weekend.
Oh, so in the last 14 years, there's probably, and through, you know, your brilliant charity, there's been far more research and attention being given to it. Probably not enough still, but it is getting easier to deal with and manage.
It is, definitely. And there's a lot more awareness of it now, which is in part thanks to the Duchess of Cambridge's experience and the fact that we as a charity were able to kind of grab that publicity and run with it and raise awareness. Services have improved. In my ones, there was no such thing as an HG day unit, whereas now a lot of hospitals, you can go in the morning, get rehydrated and get home again in the evening. And yeah, that wasn't even an option 14, 15 years ago.
So when you say you can go into the hospital and get hydrated now, how does that work out? And is it able for anybody that's living in the UK?
Yeah, so sadly, no. it's a bit hit and miss in different areas of the country. So a lot of hospitals now, either in their gynecology unit or their early pregnancy unit, they might have a system whereby your GP can refer you in. And then once you've been in once, you might be able to phone up and get back in more easily without having to go through your GP. Where you'd go in, you'd have a needle put in your arm and fluid given to
you,
sort of drip, and then you could go home again, and if you need to come back the next day and so on, which obviously with small children at home makes the whole thing a lot more manageable. But it is hit and miss. It's definitely not available everywhere, and how you get into your particular local service varies from area to area. But if you call our charity helpline, we kind of try and keep a track of how they all operate in the different areas of the country. So we would take your postcode, look at what's available near to you and what the best route in for you is. So the helpline can kind of advise on that. But it does vary, unfortunately.
When approaching how to rehydrate, if you're able to keep down fluids, say, but you know, you have to be quite careful, like when we have sickness bugs or when our kids have, you know, tummy bugs. Have you got some tips about how to kind of keep hydrated at home? Is it using a syringe to slowly put, maybe is it Dioralyte or could squash work?
So Dioralyte's a good one because it is more hydrating than regular water. You have to make it up in the right amount, and if you're going to add squash to it or something, then it needs to not be the sugar like sugar-free, because then you get the right balance of the salt and the sugar, and it hydrates you more than regular water does. But also things like ice lollies, ice cubes, drinking through a straw, because a lot of women find that the smell of things is really problematic. Even things that normally would smell nice smell really horrible. Even tap water can smell revolting when you're pregnant. So you might find it easier to drink through a straw so that you're not smelling it as much. Alternating between very, very hot drinks and very, very cold drinks. By making things very cold, you again reduce that smell. Drinking sort of whatever takes your fancy. Obviously not too much of things like caffeine or wine, but you're not going to feel like drinking that. But just trying to keep on top of it like that, really. And with the eating, there's a lot of people hear this thing about eating little and often. And it's very frustrating when I hear healthcare professionals, or I even read recently in a research paper that they were giving this advice so that women didn't have really full stomachs. And I was like, oh, that's not what that advice is about. It's so they don't have an empty stomach. There's no women with this condition who are pigging out on big meals and then throwing them up.
They wish.
I know. But there is, that advice is sound. It is good to eat little and often. And by that, I mean nibbling almost continuously on biscuits and toast and stuff like that, so that your stomach doesn't get empty, because when it's empty, it can make the nausea a lot worse. And quite honestly, right, it's nicer to throw something up than to throw nothing and acid up. Because the acid is really very unpleasant for your throat and your teeth. And you shouldn't brush your teeth immediately after throwing up. You can rinse with a bit of water, maybe with some mild mouthwash, but you need to wait half an hour or so before brushing your teeth, because otherwise you can end up doing an awful lot of damage to your enamel over a kind of 9-month period. So that's a kind of top tip. Again, on our website, there's tips about eating and drinking and oral hygiene. A lot of women find brushing their teeth very difficult anyway, because the actual brushing makes them
gagging
sick. Yeah. So.
Oh, man. I mean, thank you so much for all these tips. And yes, go to the Pregnancy Sickness Support Charities home. We'll put it in the show notes. You can go and get the tips there. Maybe you want to call the helpline and you can speak to a peer. You can speak to support groups. Thank you so much, Caitlin.
Thank you.
Thank you to Caitlin Dean there, who is fighting the good fight for people that are experiencing hyperemesis gravidarum. Next up, we're going to speak to my friend Purdy Neural, who is the beauty editor of Women's Health, but she's also a really brilliant, fun, amazing woman who has suffered with HG in both her pregnancies. So I thought it was only right to speak to her about her experience of living with this extreme pregnancy sickness. Purdy, thank you for joining us on Is It Normal? Thank you for telling us your story. Can we start from the first pregnancy? Did you get HG with your first pregnancy?
I did. And I just want to say thank you for having me. And I think it's so, so brilliant you're talking about this, because it is literally the most debilitating condition. And I felt really alone. So I think, you know, by talking about it, it's just, yeah, it's brilliant for everyone. So I literally got it from my first pregnancy, and it didn't start right away. It was around the kind of 6 week mark. And I just woke up one morning and I was like, God, I feel horrific. Like, you know, sort of like a hangover, but with zero fun story like behind it, because I hadn't been out. And it just got worse and worse and worse. And this was 2017. And this was back when GPs were still kind of in charge of your first pregnancy. So I went to my appointment and I'd been like being sick so much. It just sort of, it was like a switch. It happened one day. And I remember in the space of an hour and a half, I'd been sick 20 times. And I was like, okay, I know that morning sickness is a thing and you're meant to feel rough, but this just isn't normal. And so I had my first GP appointment, and I sort of walked in and she looked at me and she was like, oh, you don't look great. And I was like, I am vomiting nonstop. Like, I could barely get myself here. And she was like, okay, it's like, I need you to do a urine sample, you know, the classic. And I was like, okay. Mm. And I think I got about 3 drops out, and it was like,
because you were so dehydrated, right?
Yeah, basically. And she was like, yeah, it sounds like you've got hyperemesis. And I remember thinking, when she said the full condition, I was like, one, that just sounds like a Harry Potter spell, like this can't be a thing. And two, like, it kind of rings a bell. And I think this is what most people say, oh, isn't that what Kate Middleton had? Yeah. She's like everyone's reference point. And I was like, okay. And she was like, you're really not looking good. If you can't manage to keep any fluids down, we're gonna have to meet you to hospital to basically get you on a drip. And I think that just kind of terrified me a little bit. So I was like, right, okay, I'm gonna try and like get a handle on this. And I just kind of went home, and it was a lot of ice cubes and a lot of ice lollies, and that was it. And it just became relentless. It was like day after day after day. And also, it was really difficult because I was freelancing at the time. So it wasn't like I had an employer and I had all these contracts booked in. So I'd be working a few days at Grazia, a few days at Stylist. And I just felt like I didn't have, not the bravery to say like, I've got this condition, but like, I didn't want to bother anyone. And I think like that's so indicative of like women as a whole, isn't it? It's like, we never want to really be a problem. And it was just awful. So I remember like really trying to like keep a lid on it and focus on the positives. You know, people would be like, oh, well, it might stop after like 12 weeks, and it would get to 12 weeks, and it was like, nope, still the same. And then it would get to like 16 weeks, and it was like, nope, still the same. And then I was like, come on, I'm reaching the 20 week mark. This has to stop. And I'd lost like 2.5 stone at this point.
Oh my goodness.
And yeah, it was just awful. But then you'd have days where I kind of felt not too bad, or I could manage to have like a bit of toast down, and I would have to get up like a little bit earlier because I knew my journey, like my tube journey or whatever, I was going to have to get off at certain points to
throw up,
have a tactile puke. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
And it was just, and looking back, I can't believe how like how much I kind of persevered. I think I had this kind of real stubbornness that, you know, like this pregnancy and like motherhood, like wasn't going to change who I was. I was kind of really terrified of like losing myself. But yeah, it was insane. And just not really telling anyone. I think kind of feeling really alone was the main thing.
How did it affect you and your partner, who is a wonderful partner? We love Eugene, big huge. But like, how did it affect your relationship together? Because, you know they have to kind of stand up when you are pregnant, you know, fetch you a glass of water, give you a foot rub. But this, you know, how did it affect you two?
Yeah, 100%. And like, bless him, as you know, he is like just a stand-up gent and was so supportive. But even he was like, at some points, all right, this is getting a bit long now.
like hurry this up.
Yeah, he was just like, when is this going to end? And I think because we did have like these little moments of like half a day on like a Saturday or whatever, I'd be able to like muster a tiny little dog walk. It kind of felt like, oh, okay, maybe this is going. And then the next morning it would be horrendous. So it was really, really tricky, and even more so in my second pregnancy, because I think I was naive in the fact that I thought I had this tiny bit of hope, like, oh, maybe I just won't get it the second time. And and even my dad, bless him, he's retired now, but as a consultant, was like, you know, statistically, like, not every woman get it at every pregnancy. And I think I was clinging on to that. And then bam, when it hit me the second time, I was like, I can't believe I'm here again. And it was much more tricky the second time around, because he had to just look after our first child the whole time. And I think that was really, really tricky. I felt like I was letting him down because he was doing everything. And it was just no fun. Like, it was awful. And I think he found me really, you know, if I'm being really honest, like really moody and really depressive, and like his usual gags and laughs weren't working. And like, yeah, it was a strain.
So for your second pregnancy, you thought you weren't going to get it. We've just spoken to Dr. Caitlin Dean, who's the chair of this charity called Pregnancy Sickness Support. I don't know if you knew about it.
No, I didn't.
So they are this charity that have a helpline, and they specialise in extreme pregnancy sickness. And they have people, peers, that you could speak to. And she was saying that there's been some research into it, that actually it's a genetic thing.
It is. Okay.
So the likelihood of you getting it again was very high, actually, because tell your dad that.
Yeah, I think bless him. I think he was just like, you'll be all right. No, of course, don't worry about it.
But it's a genetic thing, which then can get passed down to
my daughter.
Gorgeous girls. Yeah. But I wanted to know, I mean, she was telling me about all these different medications. Did you access any of the medications? Were you hesitant to access them?
Yeah, so I was, to be fair. So I think when I first walked into my GP, who she was brilliant, but I think there was always this underlying issue of like, as long as the baby's all right, like it's not that I don't think GPs like fail to care about women, but it's like, I feel like that was always the defining factor. Well, the baby's growing well, so as long as that's okay, you know, kind of you'll get through this. And I was offered an anti-sickness medicines, and I did take them. Like, I took them all, and I found all they did in the first instance was stop the action of vomiting, but I still felt horrendous. So it stopped the vomiting enough that I could hold fluids down, and like the odd bit of toast, but that was it. And sometimes, and it sounds really awful, but like there was relief in the vomiting, only for like 5 minutes, but straight afterwards I was like, oh, like this rounds out. I've got like 5 minutes before I start to feel like a piece of crap again. And not only that, I think I had like aunties and uncles that would pop up and who would just talk about the thalidomide scandal. You know, my auntie took that, and luckily her son was fine. He didn't end up with any deformities, but I think that's still really in the back of people's minds, because obviously that was prescribed for morning sickness. And so people...
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so a lot of people were like, don't take anything, don't take anything, like you don't harm your baby. And I'm just like, well, I'm pretty sure it's safe, like it's being prescribed, yada yada yada. And it was just like everyone had an opinion, and I think that did always niggle away in the back of my mind, like, oh god, you know, am I in the like this like tiny percentage of where like it could damage me or my baby? But yeah, I didn't have the headspace to kind of like do any research or really just to ask the right questions, I don't think.
You have two healthy, gorgeous girls.
Yeah, they're
You went back for more.
Was it quite a
difficult decision? Were you tempted to not even get pregnant again because of the experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I kind of knew in the back of my head, I was like, oh, of course it's going to come back, you know. And actually, I had some really dark days with my second one where I thought, and this sounds so awful, but I would have mornings on lying on the bathroom floor thinking, oh, I've still struggled to say the words like, oh, like, would it be so bad if I even had a miscarriage? And that's awful to think that. And then you'd be like, oh my God, don't say ridiculous. Like, you know, you're so lucky to even get pregnant so easily. And just all, and it's like a constant, it's almost like you're gaslighting yourself. Like, you're trying to talk yourself out of it, but you just feel horrendous. And in my second pregnancy as well, I remember, my mother-in-law, who's like really fantastic, she sent me this study that had been co-authored by the BBC and King's College, and it was like the first ever, like the biggest study they've ever done on HG. And I couldn't get over the findings. It was like so many women thought had had terminations because they couldn't cope, had thought about having terminations, felt like 50%, you know, said they felt like it really affected their mental health, they had suicidal thoughts. And like, they'd asked one lady to keep a video diary, and I just watched her video diary and I just ended up sobbing because I was like, that is me. And she was going through everything that I'd been through. And I just couldn't believe, like, it'd take until, like, you know, 2020 for this study to even be thought about, really, which I think is just, like, indicative of, like, you know, the gender health gap as a whole. Like, oh, it's just a women's issue, you know, don't worry too much about it. And that's not to say that there aren't loads of amazing people that do care about this condition. But I just think, yeah, it's like, I think it's like a lot of conditions that women go through. There's very little research, there's very little funding. And I think the tricky one about this condition is that it's not chronic. Like, it ends the moment the baby comes out. So it's a bit like, I feel like there's this kind of attitude of like, oh, well, it ends eventually. And I remember with both pregnancies, the moment, and like my births were really easy. And I had like water births, but the moment of certainly when I had Vivian, you know, like crying, and everyone's like, are you so happy? And I just thought, yeah, but like the main thing that I'm happy about is like, oh my God, I don't feel sick. And like coming home and just being back on the sofa and like being just like having jokes in like a WhatsApp group with my girls, and literally Eugene looking at me and he was like, oh my God, I've got my wife back. Like, I haven't heard you cackle like that in, you know, a good 10 months. So yeah, it's not a fun condition.
I just can't even imagine how horrendous this is. Like, you know, pregnancy's hard enough as it is.
Exactly. I think it's exactly that, isn't it? Like, it's so, yeah, tricky. So just this to add all of that, and it just feels so relentless. And so to anyone suffering, like, I really feel for you, and, you know, don't do what I did in the first instance and just kind of rely on your inner circle. Like, yeah, I think if I'd had known about those helplines, I definitely would have rang them. Because, yeah, you just feel it's really isolating, I think. And it's just, yeah, it's relentless and it's bleak. And the thing that really helped me was second time around, I was just so honest about how crap I felt. And that was, even just that like weight off my shoulder felt good. I'm hoping that it's being taken more seriously now, but during my first pregnancy, I really didn't feel like it was.
Purdy, thank you so much for talking to us. I think it's really helpful to have your experience. And I'm sure other people that are listening to this will resonate so much with them if they're experiencing any of those symptoms. And that's kind of, the tactile puking for your journey, that just is like so horrendous. Everyone just probably thought you were hungover and you're an absolute, well, actually you're pregnant, so maybe not, but.
But it was more so in the beginning when you're not really showing. So I think, and I remember coming out of Camden and actually like on a Friday morning, obviously everyone's had like got the Thursday feeling. There's a lot of people peaking in Camden on a Friday morning, right?
That's the place to be then if you have HG.
Yeah, so it felt like, oh, actually I can kind of get away with this there. But, you know, a few people would be like, oh, rough night. And it's actually like, no, far from it. Like, I wish. But yeah, just not fun times.
Thank you for joining us on Is It Normal? Thank you for sharing your experience, and it will help a lot of people. Thank you so much to Caitlin and Purdy for helping me understand hyperemesis gravidarum. It sounds absolutely horrendous. Obviously, it's not talked about enough. I can't even imagine how hard it is for people that are experiencing this. I send you all my love and sympathy, and just hope that this podcast has helped you maybe access a support group, or maybe talk about a medication that could maybe help with you in these 9 months. You're not alone. There's loads of people that are going through it, even though the percentage sounds very small. So many people have messaged us about this condition. So I want to thank all those people that message us to encourage us to do this episode. Thank you. I've learned so much, and I hope it helps some of you that are going through this. Take care, and we'll see you soon on Is It Normal?
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.